whatever you say.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for an informal today. It is Wednesday, December 4th, approximately 3 p.m. The informal today is on case number PU13839, Montana Dakota Utility Company's request for a transmission facility cost recovery rider. We're going through the rates today. I thank the company for sitting through the last hour and a half. It's always a tough scenario. You can either pick a certain time and we start this thing at 4 o'clock, or we kind of roll like this and we can get done a little bit earlier, but then you have to wait a little bit. So I appreciate your flexibility in that. I don't have any opening comments, but I'd be happy to open up to Andy or Julie.
I have no opening comments.
No comments either.
Okay, if we could just, all three commissioners are here, Geraldine from staff, and if the company could identify who everyone is for the record, then we can turn it over to whoever need be.
Carla Hahn.
Excuse me. Carla Hahn.
Okay. Tammy Eberle, Director of Regulatory Affairs.
Darcy Nigam.
Okay, thank you all. And Tammy, are you in the middle seat, so you're starting this out?
Start us off today.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Commissioners and Jerry. We are here today to go through our transmission cost adjustment that we have proposed to effectuate January 1, 2014. So we'll have some remarks. Carla's going to start us out here, and Darcy's going to provide some additional information on our WAPA agreement. So we'll all three be going through the, you know, parts of this presentation. Just want to note up front that you'll find that this is a bit different than Otter Tail's. At this point in time, you know, we had an electric rate case in 2010. We know we've got another one coming up in the near term, because we have the, for one thing, the Heskett turbine that's going online. You know, that. So you will not see investments in transmission that we have made in our rider in particular, because those investments are either in rates today or will be in rates in the future. So we have some significant investment that we've made out west and throughout the state and throughout our integrated system that are not included in this transmission cost adjustment. So just wanted to make that clarification.
You're thinking like March of 2014 you might be coming back here for a rate case, or June of 2014?
Date yet, but has
December of 2014? During 2014.
During 2014.
Fair enough.
We know that we have that coming in front of us. So
okay.
With that, I will have Carla start us out with a bit of a background on the transmission cost adjustment.
Thank you, and thank you for having us. The TCA that we have, rate 59, was authorized in the order dated May 16, 2012. And the proposed TCA before you today is our third update, and we filed this in October of this year. The tariff for our TCA provides for recovery of cost of capital investments for transmission facilities for retail load, as well as MISO-related and WAPA-related transmission costs. And as Tammy stated, at this time, the TCA does not have costs associated to capital investments in transmission. It's MISO-related and WAPA-related costs that are incurred. The TCA reflects projected 2014 net expenses, and it includes a true-up of the prior period. And a residential customer would see a charge of 0.192 cents per kilowatt hour, and that equates to an increase of $1.22 per month for a typical residential customer.
Carla, can I just... I've wondered this from time to time, but for how long has 750 kilowatts been a typical residential customer?
A long time.
It is a long time.
So, like,
when I started here, it was.
Are 75% of your customers use more than typical and 25% less? Or do you have any idea on that?
And even on a month-to-month basis, it will, you know, it will vary significantly.
I presume this is your average.
Yeah, this
though, right?
is just an annual average over a 12-month period. At this point, I don't know what percentage fall into that yet.
Either I'm leaving too many lights on, or it's pretty hard to average 750 for a year.
if you have air, you know, especially if you have any heating requirements. So, I mean, it isn't a typical necessarily, but it's a comparison point, I think, that if we consistently use it and provide the kilowatt hours, when we use that number, they could calculate it on their own bill.
It might be something, I think, that the industry, because you certainly can't have one company using one number, but it'd be something to revisit at some point.
Of course, it's significantly higher. If it's a hot summer, it's significantly higher.
And we used to say for a typical non-space heating customer, and I guess we lost the non-space heating part somewhere along the line.
Certainly, if you're space heating, you're going to be much higher than that.
And I think most people are a little higher than that 750 anyway right now. I am anyway.
They're all over the board, really, electric users are. So the main three areas then that are included in our transmission cost adjustment are the what we heard about previously, Schedule 26, which is MISO's tariff. So it's the FERC-approved Schedule 26, where baseline reliability projects, generation interconnection projects, and market efficiency projects that are available for cost sharing are recovered through Schedule 26. I just mentioned Schedules 37 and 38. Jerry had included that in his memo. We do get some revenue credits back through 37 and 38 from companies that have left MISO, basically. So dollars that they're paying into MISO that get cost shared as a revenue back to us. So we do reflect those in our adjustment as well. We also have the MISO MVP projects, which that MISO tariff that provides the authority for that cost recovery is under Schedule 26A. And then our Western Area Power Administration, or WAPA, charges that we'll discuss in more detail. Under Schedule 26, as I mentioned, these are really the baseline reliability projects. I think that's probably majority of it, if not all of it at this time. So those are costs that are allocated our direction. Some of them may be, and I think are, some of the Otter Tail projects that you saw on the board. We're one of the MISO members that are paying for some of those costs of those transmission projects. We do have one project that was deemed a baseline reliability project, and that's the Nandan substation. It's right north, directly north of Heskett Station. That project was deemed under the MTEMP in 2009 as a reliability project. So conversely, Otter Tail is paying for a share of those costs. So what we have in our transmission cost adjustment mechanism then are the costs that we're paying to MISO through Schedule 26, and also the revenue stream that's coming back for the cost share on that project that we have.
So tell me, go ahead, Jerry.
Well, if I could add, MISO has quit doing the cost sharing for the baseline reliability projects, so anything going forward that will not be assessed, won't be shared. Anything that they've done up to this point, your arrangements stay in place that were approved previously. So
not to go too far down the what if game, but the implications of Southwest Power Pool coming into the state and the decisions you're going to have to make, it's like a global reset in all this, isn't it? And how you'll have to figure out what's best for your company and ratepayers, and then come back. But how do we begin to even look at that now? Because you're going to be asking for costs for something, and then things could change a little bit down the road, and we'll have to then true them up potentially. I mean, how would this all flow out?
And Darcy has been working on,
I'm not looking for real
analyzing.
Just kind of
potential exit.
The 10,000 foot look of how that could affect things.
Yeah, and as far as the projects and those approved today, those stay. They're memorialized. Our obligations to either pay or for people to pay us for our projects, those remain, no matter what happens as far as the relationship with SBP or as far as what happens.
So if you've got commitment on a MISO project, even if you exit, you still pay for the life of that project. You can't buy it out or something?
You either end up with a one-time fee you could negotiate at an exit fee, or you end up having just a continual annual sort of payment that you end up making. The thing that ends up happening, though, so what's happened in the past has happened in the past. We have those responsibilities. Anything in the future, now you take a look at, you know, because we could, you know, be on a seam with MISO and SPP. Are there some projects that straddle between the two RTOs, and then how does that kind of work of who invests? And there could be charges that go back and forth across the seam. You know, the other one we have is just transmission arrangements that we have to look at of how we continue to serve our load.
But if you do end up leaving MISO, you're not going to be buying out everything. There's going to be some type of relationship more than likely with them no matter what.
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
And you either do a one-time thing or you just keep doing an annual sort of schedule.
And it would go the other way, too. If Southwest Power Pool comes in, you may have the same kind of negotiation with them. Okay. Thank you.
And the other schedule that I mentioned was the Schedule 26A. Which is the FERC schedule, the MISO schedule approved by the FERC for cost allocation for the MVP project. So that is the MVP portfolio that we've talked about quite a bit today and in citing cases and all of those things. But in under Schedule 26A, we're allocated a share of all of that portfolio. So that is our load ratio share based on MISO. MISO provides an indicative charge, what they expect will be charged for the upcoming year based on what all of the owners of those projects have submitted to MISO. And so that's what we've used in our projected cost for 2014. And again, we have a true up in this mechanism. We have also, because we are a part owner on one of those projects, on that Big Stone to Ellendale MVP project, we're a 50% owner of that along with Otter Tail. So in that case, we're sharing those costs with the majority of those costs are being paid by other MISO owners or customers, as we've discussed today and you did in your prior case. So part of that, there's an A&G credit, so part of what we charge to those other customers is administrative and general O&M credit that goes out. So we're the revenues that we receive for that from MISO, we are sharing those with our retail customers. So just showing our net expense for projected 2014 then is $2.1 million under the Schedule 26A. Our list is much shorter. The next one is the WAPA charges, and Darcy, go through that.
Thank you, Tammy. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Just to talk briefly about our Western Area Power Administration charges that we also include in our transmission tracker. This is for energy that we deliver across not only WAPA system but basin system. So we're looking at more of the interconnected system of WAPA and basin. And so we have some historic rights, and I'll show you just a little bit how that works as far as what we've been able to serve through some prior arrangements, the transmission service agreement that we have with WAPA. And so particularly for the load growth out west, we've exceeded the load growth of our historic agreement with Western Area. And so we have to take network transmission service from the interconnected system or the WAPA basin system. We do have $166,000 of expenditures which are currently recovered under our rates. So we're really looking for the incremental portion as far as the North Dakota allocation of those charges, at least to recover through the transmission cost adjustment tracker. You can see on the next slide that this is an actual schedule that comes out of our transmission service agreement with Western Area Power. And what it represents is really the amount of agreement that we had for load that they would serve across their system through our historic arrangement. And this is the agreement we've talked about that ends the end of 2015. It's worked out very well for MDU, you know, over the past few years. And really for energy that we wheel across their system or deliver across their system, we just pay a one mil charge per kilowatt hour, Conversely, if there's load they deliver across our system to serve some of their preferred customers, they pay us a 1 mil charge in return for that. So it's a 1 mil reciprocal agreement that it has. These are the delivery points that are identified in the agreement itself. The one thing to take...
I don't think I know what you mean by 1 mil.
You end up paying just a penny per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
Or a percent per kilowatt hour delivered, as far as that we end up charging, at least for, in addition to losses, for energy that we move across their system.
But as far as the rate they charge you?
There is no rate as far as the transmission service. This is a historic agreement that goes back to the 70s.
Okay, so this is a train wreck when it changes.
This is the one we've talked about, that there is this impact, at least to our customers. But it's an agreement that's benefited them very well over the past few years, and especially we look at some of the growth and how we're serving, you know, our customers out west.
So you don't want to classify it as a train wreck quite yet?
It's an opportunity.
Okay. Opportunity. Hire him, Jerry. All right.
That's here. And ESU.
Yeah.
Good Bison graduate there.
Well, one thing to point out in this, you'll take a look where you see where Williston is located. It's the third from the bottom. Had 32 megawatts. And so what this table said is back in 1988, when the table was last updated, that our load in the Williston city proper itself was 32 megawatts. The current load this past winter was actually 47 megawatts, and we're actually projecting it to be about 57 this coming winter season.
Wow.
And so this agreement, you know, back in 88 when this exhibit was set up, said we had an ability through this 1 mil reciprocal transmission sharing arrangement that we could serve these loads at these delivery points. And for the most part, we may have served a little over at times or were under at times, and it really didn't matter until we got into this situation where there's all the growth out in the Bakken, and at least Wappen Basin are seeing the growth that we're getting and saying, you're going over some of these delivery points. And so in doing that, we had to negotiate with them a network transmission service to serve this load. Otherwise, we potentially would have been under the penalty provisions they put in their tariff, that any levels that we weren't taking reservations for delivery, it was a 200% penalty charge that they would have under their tariff. So we entered into a network transmission service charge for those communities or those loads that were over these historic levels and that were also over any other rights that we may have, investments we made in transmission lines with them or other arrangements. So really we look at those loads that are out in the Bakken. You could pretty much go all through all these communities, and we have grown since 1988 as far as in the level of service that we're taking from them.
There was no mechanism built into this schedule for growth, like for using more than what you have on this chart?
There was a mechanism for being able, if both parties would agree, to go in and basically update the information that was in the supplement. And we tried to do that a couple times over the year, and WAPA has not been willing to update those levels. Part of that is from their side and the loads that they serve for their customers, they don't grow. You know, Basin's portion of that customer demand growth, but what WAPA allocates, that's just a fixed number. So there's no benefit to WAPA to increase on a reciprocal arrangement. What our load levels are is when theirs would stay flat. So we tried to, but they were never open to being able to adjust these levels under this agreement.
What did they think you would do?
That we would take transmission tariff service from them and basically pay them what their tariff rate is, which is a much more expensive than paying the 1 mil reciprocal rate.
Mm. And is that what you end up doing?
Yes. And so that's what we're going to talk about is the charges that we get for deliveries that are over these historic community levels. So as I indicated, Williston is one of those, 32 megawatts. We're expected to be at 57. Another good one to look at is Watford City, which is the second one down, 3.7 megawatts. Our projected load in Watford City this coming year is 12.
Say that again?
Is 12 megawatts at Watford City.
And what was, where is that on this? Okay. Oh, my gosh. Whoa.
So from the standpoint of this transmission service agreement, we don't have the ability to serve that load under this, so we have to make another arrangement. And the only way is to take tariff service from them.
Or build something yourself.
Or build something ourselves.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
And could you just maybe just a bit more background on, because that's how you got to the reciprocal agreement, was the cost sharing. This is a little unrelated, but is WAPA in on this Basin's new 345 kV?
They are not. The investment is being made by Basin. but the investment would go into the same system or tariff that includes the both the revenues for Western and Basin.
So would it, would this, anything that you use on that system, you this is your rate scheme or whatever, this is how you determine what you pay this agreement?
Well, this has historic rights, so we don't have to pay anything for transmission service from Wappan Basin for loads up to these amounts.
Okay.
It's anything over these amounts, as we've had load growth since 1988. If we can't show that we have facilities ourselves that we own, generation that we have that can support this load, or if we're not making some other investment or have some other transmission agreement, then we're required to go through on these delivery points and to take network transmission service from them or a point-to-point.
So what type of modeling do you do or have you done to determine whether it's better to go take pay the tariff rate or to build new generation and transmission of your own?
Sure. So some of that, if we take a look at, you know, these places, and we can actually go to the next slide, may end up helping. You thinking? Yes.
I think the map.
Okay. This is a map we put together kind of as a suggestion a little bit from our conversation last week where we talked about the number of ties that we have to MISO. So we're talking to other neighbors. Which one was the laser pointer? Which one was the laser on this?
Are those lightning bolts?
Jerry, where's the laser?
Middle.
The what?
Laser's in the middle. It's supposed to be
middle. Oh, it is the middle? Okay. So the ties, that this is our electric transmission system. There is no differentiation in voltage that's included on this. So it really shows all of the transmission facilities that we have. So everything that's the 40,000 volts and up to 345,000 volt lines that we have are shown on here. But it really shows the communities that we serve and the transmission lines that connect those communities together. The end up yellow lightning bolts that you end up seeing, those end up being the interconnections or other facilities that connect to another entity that's a MISO entity. So again, this only shows our transmission lines. It doesn't show lines that are off of this map. This is at Ellendale, so this is a connection that we have with MISO or Otter Tail. This is one of our three ties. This is the tie that we have in Mandan that's with Minn Kota. And then the other tie is the one that's up at Coyote Station that we have with Otter Tail as well. All of the blue lines that we have or lightning bolts indicate the other 39 ties that we have with Western Area Power Administration or with Basin Electric. So there's another transmission facility that is at these locations that we basically have the ability to move power in and out of that delivery point. So this is that piece of how interconnected we are with them. And typically, if there's an arrangement, you know, at some of these areas, it's how do we move power and serve at these places and their historic arrangements, either through this transmission service agreement, where we've taken all of our facilities here and say they're allowed to use them for a similar list of customer loads they have, or we can say we need to be able to serve customers, in this case, at Watford City, even though we have no transmission ourselves that connects Williston with Kildare, and so we're totally dependent on them to get down to Watford City. And so the calculations that get into in doing this, these are all the delivery points that we meter from them, how much energy we take and how much demand we end up taking from all these delivery points through the month. And through that, we can end up calculating what the loads are at these particular delivery points. And then compare that against either this schedule or other places where we have a transmission development that we've made with them. One of those examples would be when the 230 kV line was built from Miles City that goes over to Headinger and south to New Underwood. We invested in that project and have 75 megawatts of transmission rights across that. It's about a 300 to 400 megawatt transmission line. We end up owning the section that goes from the Montana border and down to Headinger and south to the South Dakota border. We own that section of the line, but we have rights on the entire line itself, and we also own a substation that's in Bowman. So of that project, we invested in a portion of that. We get 25%. As far as what the capability on that project is. So that's another thing that we take in addition just to what these deliveries are. What other rights do we have in other projects we've invested in?
We have just one summary, just to kind of summarize the three pieces, I guess, that we've talked about, the Schedule 26, 26A and then the WAPA and what the balancing account from the prior period adjustment. So the total dollars that we are requesting to recover through the TCA in 2014 would be the $3.4 million approximately. As we've mentioned before, it is trued up. So the estimates that we've utilized are trued up as we move forward. The WAPA expenses that you see here are those that are not included in our retail rates. And so as we move forward and as we analyze and look at how, you know, there's a lot of analysis going on right now, you know, with a lot of the change, with the potential with SPP, with the expiration of the agreement, and you can see we probably wouldn't build a whole lot of transmission for $624,000. So for right now, that that's part, you know, just on a very simplified view of that. But as of course, as we move forward, we'll continue that analysis. And as we move forward, there may be some of this that would move into base rates and some that would just continue on through the transmission tracker. We really saw it more as a vehicle for those cost allocations that are difficult, or coming from MISO, that are probably less stable, so that we can just continue to reflect both the revenues and the expense side through the adjustment.
And this $3.38 million is the amount that you were talking about that would require $1.22 per month from the 750 kilowatt hour customer.
That is correct. Yes. That is correct.
When does this agreement expire with WAPA?
That expires the end of 2015.
Okay.
And it was signed when?
I think back in the 70s is probably when the first date on this particular one is signed.
We're really
15 seemed like a long ways away then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We were doing MVPs in 1970.
Yeah.
Really does serve the load out in this area. It really was. I think it's a lot like what we're trying to do with the MVPs, but we were doing it just on our own out here. And, with that, we don't have anything else to present. We would request approval of the adjustment mechanism.
Okay. Can you offer this up as your testimony?
We will offer this as our testimony.
Thank you. Happy to receive it. I don't have any questions more about this particular case, but if the three of you have 10 minutes whenever we're done, I just wanted to talk to you some more about just in general the whole transmission process, if you guys have a couple minutes. But I have no more questions about this case. I don't know if Julie or Annie.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about the code required that you notify customers. You didn't do that, so your plan is now to insert a bill notifying customers that their charge is going up on the same time that they go up.
That is correct, and just some background on that. I don't know that it was an oversight as much as it was. We looked at the transmission cost adjustment as a mechanism similar to the cost of gas and the fuel cost adjustment. Those mechanisms that change, you know, at this point, they both change monthly. That particular code or statute doesn't apply to. And so really saw this transmission cost adjustment that we're changing on an annual basis to be similar. And I understand that isn't the interpretation. And so we did not do an insert at the time we filed. The commission has noticed it, so there has been public notice of it. But we would propose at this time, and we have done inserts. The customers are aware there's a transmission cost adjustment mechanism. We have done bill inserts in the prior to, you know, at the time those rates went into effect. So we would propose to do that again at this time.
How come we didn't alert you the last times that they were supposed to be in advance? Or how did we notice it this time?
I don't know what happened in this case the last time they did it, and this time Ilana told me that I needed to do it, and So I just went with her interpretation. But basically what the interpretation, I think, is that in the fuel costs in the PGA, there's not a number in those tariffs, so the tariffs aren't changing. It goes under the same tariff. In this case, the number is in the tariff, so we're doing a tariff change. It is subject to interpretation. I mean, I just got Ilana's legal interpretation was to do it, to do the customer notice. And so this is what we worked out to, in view of that, to try and still make this work for the 1st of January.
So did Otter Tail interpret this as being something, because they did their notice to customers?
Yeah, they did include a on their bills a statement to the customers explaining it.
Okay. So they interpreted it like Ilana is interpreting it, that it's a change?
I assume so, or unless they just got lucky and put it on there.
Would never be that, right, Pete?
Yeah.
And tell me what the plan is in terms of notifying customers. How will that, what will it look like?
Sure,
what will you say?
I would request that we do one insert, because I think it would be very confusing at this point. Even if we delayed implementation, I think it would be very confusing. Here we filed it and here it is effective. I would request that we be, that we do one insert, and we would do it at the time of the rate change. Because, you know, there has been public notice.
And what would you suggest the insert say?
The insert would say that this is the annual change to the transmission cost adjustment. The tariff itself has been approved and was approved back in 2012. The mechanism has been approved. And so it's not a new mechanism. And so the insert would say this is the annual change associated with the transmission cost adjustment, you know, in so many words. Okay. So to me, that would be clearer to customers at this point, mm-hmm. and that we would certainly make note that when we file the next adjustment mechanism, we would do that mm-hmm. insert at that time. But to do one now, I think it would just add to customer confusion.
Jerry, when they file them in advance, is the idea to give customers notice that they can make comments? Is there any suggestion, like, if you have concerns about this, call the commission, or you have till this deadline, or is there any coordination like that, or is it just basically the same thing, only in advance of getting the bill?
I think that was the idea behind the rule, was to notify them ahead of time when there's a rate increase. And so whether or not you want to call this a rate increase,
I think it'd be hard to tell people on the street that it's not a rate increase. They're paying more money. I mean, they see it that way, and that's the net effect, is they're paying more. So I would never tell somebody that it wasn't that.
And you know, and I mean, maybe it would have been better if the number wouldn't have been in the tariff. If it would have just been done like the fuel cost adjustments are.
I guess to add to that, I do believe it was, if you look and read it, it says increase. So let's say if we do a true up and at one point it's a decrease, so then we don't do an insert. It does, I think the statute itself was most likely written before there were the mechanisms that we have in place today. And so it really was written around a rate case, which we, in a rate case, is exactly what we do. We wait. We don't do that insert mm-hmm. at the time we file. We wait till we get the, you know, when that procedural schedule has been set, and so that we can advise customers, you know, when the input sessions are and those kinds of things. And that statute lines up really well with that kind of a notice. With the adjustment mechanisms, it's at that point, you know, we would be able to advise them that we filed, and they certainly would be able to contact you. But we wouldn't have any other information at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to look at that a little more closely and see what what's all said about it in the law. Okay. I agree, though, to the extent that, you know, we want to minimize customer confusion. At the same time, customers notice when their rates go up, and we get calls about it. So then this type of thing has to be done, you know, correctly, so that people feel that they're being, you know, notified in a way that's required by the law and that sort of thing. So I just want to look at it and make sure that what we're doing is the right thing.
So then if you choose to have them, it's your motion. So if either it'd be basically a vote in December saying we approve it the way it is, or they would have to send something out and then delay the approval till January?
I wouldn't even venture to guess what it is at this point until okay. I look at that.
But we're already looking at maybe having a special meeting for Otter Tail. We'll have to have that
right.
decision.
This one we would not need a special meeting for because the notice period is up on the 16th.
So it could fit in with our next, okay. We could deal with this at our next
regular schedule. All right, we'll just let you decide and we'll go from there.
Or we could do it at the same time as Otter Tails. It's up to you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Mr. Crispin, anything else?
I'm ready to move into your next discussion.
My next discussion? Okay.
Transmission stuff.
Well, I don't want to hold you two up for anything
I have
else.
Another meeting, so I'm going to slip out, although I would like to. Here.
Well, no, if you want to stay, we'll just continue it, because I just, this might, it's not really germane so much to this, but I know that you had a tight schedule and I didn't want to.
Yeah.
Basically, I just wanted to explore a little deeper the.
Thanks, you guys. Appreciate it.
The, how this transmission agreements is going to flesh out. Okay, this, let me explain to you what I think I understand, okay? There's been historical agreements with WAPA to exchange energy back and forth at a really good rate for everybody. And this thing is coming due at 2015. There's no more extending. There's no more anything. This is a hard deadline?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, nothing that we can do to extend that.
Nope, we've tried.
Okay, so they're not willing is what you're saying. Right. It's not that it's – okay.
WAPA's not willing, and that there's no extension clause in that agreement that had a hard end date, so they're just taking the standpoint of saying they can't extend it. And it's not per their tariff today, so it falls under what they'd consider a grandfathered agreement today.
Okay.
So it's almost like an exception from their current tariff.
Okay, so as this thing unfolds, by 2015, yep. What you've relied on WAPA from is no longer going to be there.
Correct.
Okay, so then how do we even begin to approach that shortfall?
Sure.
I'm just trying to get a feel for, okay, this is close. 2015 is like,
yes.
Like
nope.
Next
so
week.
We
got to bring them.
Yeah. Nope, we need yes. to get the presentation.
Right. Big rate increase.
Yeah, you get to do it.
I mean, because I see a very, 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 very big rate increase coming.
Well, we've been working on this question for a while. So it's and the other
you
one.
You and I have talked about this before, yep. So it's not a complete surprise. But
mm-hmm. I want to go back to this one. So, and again, we've talked about this a little bit, and we've thought about this question for quite a while. We've done some analysis, at least, on potential impacts, and I think we've talked about some of those in the past as well. You know, the one thing we take a look at with our system, you know, the predominantly, you know, this is probably the place right about in here if you draw a line that would break, you know, our load about half. There's about half the load that's this direction. The largest pocket is right in the Bismarck-Mandan area. The other half is out this direction. You know, we do have a significant amount of generation, MISO ties, and at least from our standpoint.
So what you're trying to do, though, and I don't want to belabor this too long, but the you have to figure out whether you have to build generation of your own or you can go buy it somewhere else to meet your need. Is that in a nutshell what you have to figure out?
So the back of the envelope piece says when we did this analysis a few years ago, the amount of transmission service that we will have to take, assuming that WAPA stayed out of SPP or market, mm-hmm. If you take a look at, what's the best way to look at? When this Exhibit H goes away,
okay,
the number that we were expecting, and it's for all of our load, was somewhere about a $6 to $10 million of transmission service.
Okay.
$6 to $10 million is what it was. Now, that isn't saying that there is some way that we could get credits back for their usage on our system, but just from what we would strictly look at from a bill to basically replace this. So that's the benefit our customers are getting today is about a $6 to $10 million benefit, at least from this agreement. So if you look at that and say, how much transmission can you build if you don't want to avoid paying that rate? You know, if you have a fixed network charge of about 20%, you're talking somewhere that's in this $30 to $50 million of transmission. That's the equivalent of what we're looking to pay. And if you look at all these delivery points along here, there really is no facilities we have in a lot of these places to end up building around.
So there's no realistic way to build all the transmission that will be required by the time it's needed. It's going to be what's the cost going to be?
It would not be cost effective. And the transmission exists today because there's no reliability delivery issue in serving that load. It exists. So we'd be replacing something that's existing we could get through a tariff service. What we're working on with them is to really figure out how much service we need to take. Because when this goes away, you fall into a different set of rules that determine what these numbers were. And so you fall into what do we have capabilities for generation transmission that we have, and also what does the agreement between, you know, where we would be if they were still in the interconnected system versus if they ended up joining SPP, which we believe they'll do. So we go take a look at and see, here's this joint operating agreement that MISO and SPP have. There's some interpretation in a section in there about how you share transmission and excess transmission capability, at least along that seam.
What if they have no capacity to give you guys?
And that's what we look at and we study and try to decide where is that point that we'd have to take transmission service from. If they would have stayed in WAPA, we had always figured we would be taking transmission service somewhere about in this area. There's one approach in looking at that says maybe the place that we take transmission service from them is this load that's up in this area, from this point and this direction. And so now we're in the place of looking, is there some transmission that we could build or some generation that we could look at as an offset? And again, it gets back to the $6 to $10 million of expense that we would have. You know, you can't build a lot of transmission or a lot of generation.
The numbers always change, but the huge delta that Basin has right now, what if there's nothing left to give MDU at all? Because they're going to fully utilize it to meet their own demand.
Correct. So the one thing we're looking at is like, again, if you look at from this sort of place, we know we can serve all this load this direction.
You're saying that the basin growth is not in that pocket?
It's not in this pocket. We have the Coyote Generation Station here. We have the generation that's over at Heskett Station.
That's the map I've seen with all the hot spots. There's hot spots or other areas.
So all of this load, we believe we have some ability to serve this without WAPA system in the future because of investments we've made. We get over to this side of the system. Now, we have gas turbines that are out here as well. Obviously, we own transmission lines. The question where that we're short transmission is really from this place and up this direction. And so we would look to take that service at least to make sure there's capacity to serve our customers up in this area
up here.
But
there's no service up there to take, though. That's the point. When will we know? I mean, do we have a...
No, we have the right to that service today. So all we're talking about is transitioning. We're taking network service today. That load falls under that agreement. There's no new service that we have to take.
But in 2016, it might not be there.
Well, the load in itself, and we've talked with Western about this, the load that we're serving through this transmission service agreement and that we're getting through the network transmission service agreement has historic rights between the two of them. So we don't start over from being the lowest priority customer. What's up there, assuming that we keep paying the transmission rate, is basically allocated to our customers because we're paying our fair share.
So they have to keep
carrying. They can't discriminate against
us.
You
just have to start paying a lot more.
Correct.
Okay, that's the piece that I was. Okay, so as long as you're willing, but that's the amount we don't know what that cost is going to be. It's not going to be one penny.
No.
No, that's good. $7 to $10 million was the original.
I understand. No, that's the question.
Yeah, that was the original. Yeah.
And the 7 to 10 assumes you're starting to pay
way back there.
Here. If you start paying up here, maybe the number is half of that, so 2 to 3 million.
Is the amount that they want to charge you a reasonable price, or is it a price that they just know they can get away with because you have no other choice?
it's a tariff service. It's their standard tariff service. So they don't negotiate a separate rate with us. It's going through a formula rate that says here's their facilities and here's how they come up with a revenue requirement and all the customers they allocate it across. Their rate today is sort of comparable to what our network transmission rate is. They're both about $3 a kW month. They're close to that. Well, if you interconnect with them because they're not in an RTO, they charge you transmission service. If you're a generator in MISO, the load pays the transmission costs, and the generator assuming that they don't take a transmission service request, they don't pay anything for delivery or usage of the transmission system.
What if you wake up one day in late 2014 and you realize it's more effective to build your own transmission line?
And that's some of the pieces we're looking at, and we're actually having a conversation about maybe there's some way to invest in something to get us rights.
Well, it just seems like, talk about we're perfect set up for ADP. You come in and make a case about we maybe need something like this. You sketch something out. We look at it with some triggers in there. And at least you, because we built that transmission line for Basin quickly. That one that went from Williston to Tioga, I don't think that thing took 6 months. But that was probably the exception, not the rule. Mm-hmm.
For us to look at building anything to get another line or source up into this area, we really have to start at Beulah. So we're really talking about 100 miles of transmission. Yeah. And based on the voltage class you're at, you know, you're in.
Unless you build a big honking gas plant up by Williston, 500 megawatts or something.
Well,
right?
That is a potential way to avoid taking transmission.
And it's part of.
Maybe we could get our federal team to talk to their federal team.
Okay. Well, I understand this a lot better now. I think the point. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, isn't there a lot of logic to that, though, in that, you know, we talk about, I don't know those towns in Montana so well, but making that transmission jump to get that power up there, knowing that you're way short of power up there anyways. So. Right. Not necessarily you, but you, Basin, everybody is way short of power up there for the future. So it seems like it's just logical that we would build some generating capacity up there, and then we don't have to increase the transmission capacity.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
What you're moving for them, that's their presence power, is going to be the coax and
correct. Correct.
Okay. So how can you keep us informed what you're doing on this going forward?
Well, and, you know, we do that partially through the Integrated Resource Plan, which we, you know, we only file every 2 years. But
which we read,
you know,
and put on the shelf.
What, you know, the planning group is looking at more frequently than that. So we just need to continue to be in front with information meetings and keeping you in the loop. And as we find out more information, even every day, new information on the SPP and how that may, their move to SPP may affect us. So.
But Commissioner Crispin's point, I think, we're about as accurate as they could be. I mean, it's you look at it and you're like, well, we know it's going to be needed up there. Yeah. Let's be the leader in building something. MDU overbuilt way back when in the 70s, and we benefited the customers for 30 years on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is an opportunity to do something like that again. All right. Okay, that was for.
That is, I mean, it just, even in our IRP today, it says.
You know, hopefully, you got something in your scheming that you can't tell us about now, but you're thinking about it. The Randy Crispin. Coal natural gas peaking plant. All right. Commissioner Crispin, anything else?
It's a good place to drop it.
All right. Anything else for the good of the informal discussion?
I will have one more thing. Thank you for your patience this afternoon.
Yes, absolutely.
Got longer than we had hoped. So.
All right. With that, we'll close the informal on case number PU 13-839. Thank you all.